But okay. For now, that's what I'm
doing. Okay. Hey, this is Kevin with Mix Coach. I've got a friend, Zach Whitfield, who is interviewing me today. He's in the RIM program at MTSU, and he's got, it looks like, a page full of questions. He's asking for a class project, so I thought it might be interesting for me to go ahead and record it, and that way if I covered anything that you guys didn't know, then you would know it now, or at least my perception of it. So, Zach, if you've got your questions ready, I guess we can go ahead and start... fire away.
Yes, sir. First off, this is basically going over the whole of what my paper is supposed to be on. What are some of the technological advancements that will be shaping the recording industry in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, probably the biggest thing, the first thing that springs to mind is things like Auto-Tune and Melodyne. Melodyne, I think, is probably a better interface for tuning vocals. Basically, they're both vocal editing programs that you use either as a standalone plugin or as a plugin to something like Pro Tools or Digital Performer or whatever your recording software is, you use it within it. But I'd say with that, that's probably transformed music business as we know it, because now, I mean, ever since the Cher song from several years ago, when somebody used that from, they took it from a corrective effect to an effect, and even recently T-Pain has kind of made a career out of just using Auto-Tune. And then the brothers that do the Auto-Tune the News, yeah, I mean, they're using it as an effect, and it's really kind of a cool thing. It's kind of like the robot voice thing. But let's say even now, I mean, I thought back 10 years ago when Cher was using it that was the end all, but it's been rediscovered by T-Pain, and I can't remember the name of the brothers that did it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've seen it on YouTube channel. But
anyway, that'll be on the video somewhere. But yeah, I would say that things like GarageBand, and I'm using a new plugin now called Superior Drummer that is absolutely one of the best drum programming softwares that I found. You cannot hit any note on it and make it not sound like a real drum. So, I mean, things like that are transforming. This is enabling guys like me who naturally or normally have to go out and hire a band to play everything, rent a studio, hire a second engineer, hire a drummer, hire a cartridge company to bring the drums in, guitar players, all that stuff. It allows you to kind of not have to do that anymore and be able to, you know, improve your chops on Superior Drummer, Auto-Tune, and Pro Tools. And I've, you know, the website I've got, mixcoach.com, is designed to help guys like you who are just getting into music to learn how to get around in it so that you can create things. So I would say that the thing that's going to transform technology-wise are just the quality of the plugins, like sound, Superior Drummer, GarageBand, like I said just a second ago. I just touched on it, but I mean, that software just gets better and better. It's software that comes free with a Mac, and there's so many features in it now. I mean, like timing correction, just like Melodyne, pitch correction, just like Auto-Tune and Melodyne. So I mean, you can get that stuff right out of the box on a Mac computer. There's nothing to keep anybody from creating music. I think that's the biggest pivot point for what's going to change things in the future, is just accessibility to really, really good tools.
Yeah, I have quite a few friends that are in bands that use stuff like this, mm-hmm, for writing purposes, mm-hmm, so they can put it in a computer and have it later. If they want to look back at it, they can edit it and fix what they messed up. And that really brings me to the next question, is with the availability of these products, what is the advantages of getting a degree in production? What separates someone who's gone to school for production from someone who just picked up the program and put time into learning everything from it?
Well, I hope the answer I'm about to give you doesn't fly in the face of why you're doing this interview and all that kind of stuff. But I think at the very heart of a person, you can't educate into a person the desire to create music. You can't, when you go to a place like MTSU or Full Sail or one of these very well-known and well-respected colleges, you're not going to come out the other end of the college with a desire to create music. You've either got it or you don't. I'm not saying musical ability, not at all. Because I think that can be crafted and created and honed and improved and all that kind of stuff. But your innate ability to want to create music cannot be instilled to you in a 4-year college. You either come out of high school, go into high school, go into kindergarten, banging on pots and pans, and your life would not be complete unless you're creating music, or it's not that way. And I'm not even saying that the person who is not creating music is not a musician. I'm just saying that, with a 4-year college, the bottom line is college is a good thing to have. College is it's a great thing to, as your parents say, have something to fall back on. I think that's important. And with this recording degree that you may be getting, it's definitely important that you think about things like marketing. Because I've had this conversation twice today. This is the third time. You can be the best recording engineer, the best mixer, the best guitar player, the best front man for a band, and if nobody knows about you, then you are still, singing in your basement. And nobody's ever going to hear about you unless you learn marketing. And then your marketing's not going to do you any good. You're not going to be able to add your talent plus your marketing unless you have some business sense. So unless you have those three things in place, then you're really just kind of an artist without an outlet. Because the marketing gets attention to your artistry, and then artistry plus attention or marketing equals money coming in. Unless you know what the heck to do with it, the business degree. I'm not saying that you should do anything. I'm just saying that a well-rounded musician who knows how to make money in the music business has a balance of skills, some of which musicians are not naturally geared toward, like finances and stuff like that. That's why all these rock stars, who make it all of a sudden, 5 years later, you fast forward 5 years and they don't have anything because they don't have any business sense about it. So I think the original question was, the bottom line, the gist of it was, do you need a recording degree to create music? And the answer, in my opinion, is no. I think it does give you a better rounded, all-encompassing view of what the music business is. In other words, they teach you business, but they don't teach you how to be a more creative musician, I don't think. I think they give you a well-rounded thing. So only until you get out of college is when you really start honing your craft as being a musician. So I think it's a good thing to have that education, but I also think that there's a lot of people who are creating great music who's never gone through a 4-year college for that. Does that answer your question a little bit?
So really, the high-level producers are on about the same, are they on the same playing field as what someone who didn't go to go to college for what they're doing, or is there something that, like, other than having that degree and being able to say I've got a degree in this, is there anything that someone like you has over a skill or something, a way you can approach something that you would have over, say, one of my friends that's just recording their friend's band in a garage?
Well, I think the main difference, if I can just break it down to like very simple black and white, is that most of the time, if I and one of your friends in college are equally as talented, in other words, you would prefer my mix one day over his and his mix the next day over mine, then you level the playing field that way. And I honestly believe that there's high school guys that can do better than I do. I mean, literally, there are so many talented people in this world. That I would never say that I'm the most talented at anything, because I know I'm not. What I do have, and here's the biggest difference. His friends, the bands that he records, are either connected with people who can bring him more work and bring him more credibility, or not. And he would probably tend to work with college students who don't have the money to record yet, or maybe their parents are still kind of helping them out a little bit. And I am working with professionals now who have, in most cases, have the money to work on a project. So the bottom line is, here's the bottom line. It's all about if you're talented, if you can go, if you can do the recording, the writing, the playing, the singing. It's really just a matter of the network. Then that's why these super producers tend to get the bigger jobs, because they are being watched by industry professionals and the industry movers and shakers. And the college guy right now is being watched by the professors who, some of them are connected and some of them are not. They're surrounded by the students, which some of them are connected, some of them are not. And high-level producers, as you're calling them, are connected with movers and shakers who have the money to pull the trigger on a project and make it work and get it on iTunes the next day and then get a video on CMT or get them on MTV or if MTV even plays videos anymore, I don't know.
Barely.
But does that answer your question about, the bottom line, the summary of it is the playing field is being leveled between high-level producers and that's your term, not mine. I mean, the high-level producers or the producers with notoriety and connections, and the guy who just started and just bought Pro Tools and he's working out of his basement. The only difference is who they know. And that's really the marketing aspect of it. You have to network with people. So the playing field is being leveled because you can record a song tomorrow and get it on iTunes by the next day. And so can I. So if your song is better than mine, then you've got just a better shot than I do. There's a girl that I just showed you the video, and I think you were familiar with it, on YouTube, Rebecca Black. I mean, as we're looking at her YouTube channel right now, I think this song may have been out a week.
Yeah.
And it's viral now. 61,213,876 views, and that was 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I mean, so she's probably easily gotten another 500,000 views now. Who's ever heard of this, forget the name of the producer, Art Music. Who's heard of him last week?
Nobody.
And now who's going to be calling him next week for their thing because their daughter wants a CD? And he obviously has the ability to make it go viral. He did. He did that for, and I think you may be asking one of these questions later. He did that whole video and the song for $2,000 when some of these major record labels are spending $200,000. So you can see that the playing field is being leveled every day. That video right there, I can tell by looking at it, it was shot on that camera right there. A Canon 5D or 7D or even a T2i with a $100 lens on it. It was shot with something like that. So that's how you can shoot a video and do a production for $2,000. I mean, so you can see, who knows if he's got a degree or not, you know? So.
Yeah, and that, with that, is the future of the music industry going towards these one-hit wonders, these YouTube viral videos? Is it going to where, is the profitability of singles getting to the point to where the label is going to record a single for someone over a full album? Because
I hear your question. That's a great question. As far as I can tell, when the music business kind of started up with singles, it was in the days of the late 50s, early 60s, when they didn't just record 10 songs because that's what you did. They recorded an A side and a B side. Have you ever heard of that
yes.
terminology before? It was on when the records were out, and you didn't want to put something on this end when you could put something on this end too. You know, the A side of the record might have been, "Love Me Tender" by Elvis, and on the B side was another song. So literally, they would go into the studio and cut two songs. And then record companies are the ones that got in, and they thought that record companies have always sold. They don't really sell the music. They sell the medium that the music goes on, for the most part. So the record company, that's why a lot of them are reeling now, because nobody's buying CDs anymore, and that's what they were selling. You know, they would put whoever on that CD that would sell the most CDs. So they were selling the plastic and the wrapping and the shrink wrapping and the barcodes. That's what they were selling. And they would put whoever on there that would sell the most of these. Well, now people are downloading them off of iTunes. So that's why the record companies are having such a tough time, is because everybody's been too busy complaining about illegal downloading that they didn't look at, well, this is inevitable. We're not going to stop it, even if we sue our fans, like, you know, some bands have done. You can't stop people from, you know, everything is going towards free. I mean, how much do you think it cost Rebecca Black to put that video up on YouTube? How much does it cost you?
Nothing,
exactly. So, I mean, that's where everything is going. But YouTube makes a killing by giving all this bandwidth away, right?
Yep.
I mean, so they've obviously figured it out. And it's just a matter of time before, you know, the record company comes around. And you know, I don't think you're going to be able to stop illegal downloading. I mean, it is illegal. And it's unfortunate that some of my writing friends are not getting paid on some of that stuff. But, you know, it's just an argument that we have to figure something else out instead of complaining about what's broken. Instead, take that effort and try to figure out how we can create another business model that works better.
And even if you take it away from the illegal pirating, which, I mean, that, I don't see how that's ever going to stop. I mean, they killed LimeWire, and then other ones are popping up. I mean, even if you kill one, there's going to be 10 that pop up in its place. And even if you go away from pirating, basically, if you want to listen to a song and you've got access to the internet, you can go look on YouTube, and listen to whatever you wanted to. You can go to Pandora. Mm-hmm. You can, a lot of bands put up their songs on MySpace. I mean, you can get access to these songs without physically having purchased them.
Exactly. And if you don't put something up on YouTube, then somebody else is. And they're going to be getting all the views. And they're going to be getting all the opportunities to advertise, you know. But I think your question was, are we getting away from a 10-song record and going to single stuff? And I think it's always been about the single. It's always been about the single. We started off doing singles and B-sides. And then if they set out one single and a B-side and it was pretty popular, then they'd do another one. At least, I mean, you'd have to research this and back me up on it, but... and then when they got enough songs, then they would put out the record. So they would build singles to the record. And now what they do is they build a record and hope they'll get a single, right?
Yeah.
But the singles have always been how you make the money. I mean, when you make royalties from airplay, it's from the single. It's not from the filler songs. I mean, there's a post on my blog, Kevin Ward Music, and it may be on Mixcoach too, but the days of riding along on the coattail of a hot song, they're all but gone, because nobody wants that, you know, 11th and 12th song that's on there just because. And anybody that I produce, I try to talk them out of doing any more songs than they need to. You know, why are you putting 11 songs on this record? Why do people do 10 songs anyway? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, back in the day when we were recording on tape, it would only record about 30 minutes worth of music. It's 10 3-minute songs. So that's why there's 10 songs. And now we've got hard drives with, I mean, I've got 4 hard drives here. One's 2 terabytes, and the other 3 or 4 are 1.5 terabytes. Well, if we use that same judgment, then there would be like 200 songs on every record.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so I in my opinion, I think it needs to be the song. Because that song is what's going to make somebody money, not the record so much, you know?
Yeah.
The song is what's going to sell the record. So, yeah, I think we're going back to a single song model. Definitely.
And with that, let's go back to iTunes. And we were talking about that a little bit. And with other things like with YouTube and Pandora... One thing that I think I've kind of noticed, and a few of my friends I've talked to about have noticed, is that iTunes popularity is starting to peak a little bit, and it might drop or it might go away if some other type of technology or music distribution is going to take over and replace iTunes or...
Well, I'm a huge Mac fanboy. I don't see iTunes going away anytime soon. It may be peaking right now, but I think it's because people are tired of buying songs to listen to when they can get them for free. I mean, there are ways, there's probably 100 ways for me to go and Google how to download the audio from this Rebecca Black song. I mean, if I wanted it, but I think people are just getting tired of paying, you know, for a song. That if you noticed in the last couple of months, Apple has gone from a 30-second preview to a minute and a half preview. Have you noticed that? When you preview a song, there's a minute and a half preview now, which is half the song, or more even, in some cases. And I think what it's coming to, I think what you'll see in the next couple of months is that Apple's going to make a big, they're probably going to go with a model of buying an account every month, like the Netflix model. I mean, Netflix is, I mean, they nailed that model because, I'll have to erase that, but anyway, yeah, you pay a certain amount a month. And then you can download as many or watch as many movies as you want to. You never own the movies, though. I mean, you can get them if you want to, but I think iTunes will probably go with that cloud music. And I forget the name of the company. There's a company now that's doing cloud music. Pandora is one of them. Of course, it's free, I think.
Yes, Pandora.
But I think, I don't know if
the... Has advertisements and...
Yeah, so well, yeah, they sell it with advertising. But, yeah, I think you'll see Apple probably, they'll be fine. I mean, I don't think it's going to be any less popular. I think they'll announce this model and everybody else will follow suit the way it kind of normally does. Or somebody will be an innovator and then Apple will buy them out and they'll do the cloud music or whatever. Cloud music, cloud videos. I think that's what you'll see, and I think that's why Apple TV. I think Apple TV is still hasn't seen its big day either. Are you familiar with Apple TV?
No.
It's basically a piece of Apple equipment that you hook up to your TV, and you can stream movies from Apple, rent movies from Apple, I should say. You can push your music from your laptop to your TV upstairs. You can look at a YouTube channel. I think you can look at Netflix on it. I think they're working on a Hulu model where you watch television shows. I think that's where everything's going, and that's why I think it's important that people pay attention to marketing themselves as artists or whatever. I mean, YouTube is a very powerful tool, and I think that... So is iTunes, but I think you'll see iTunes go with that whole music cloud model pretty soon, within this year, I think.
Alright, alright, so we talked a little bit about the pirating and how that's affecting it, and did I ask about how they're going to be making them, how you're going to get around, or was that what we were talking about, how you're getting around pirating, and how producers will make money in spite of pirating? Because I know that my friends will still, like, if they really, the only way that they'll buy a hard copy of a CD is if they really like it. Like, some of my friends will buy, like, a Lady Gaga hard copy because one of my friends really, really loves Lady Gaga, and people like to get discographies of hard copies just because they really like a band. And that's the only time that I really see my friends buying CDs is when they really love a band and they want to get all of them and stuff like that.
Well, I think, are you familiar with the Nine Inch Nails? The band Nine Inch Nails?
I've heard of them, but
yeah. I don't know. Well, and there's another couple of bands that have done this. They have basically, they give away their music themselves. In other words, they control people getting their music instead of people going around and uploading it to some server with the risk of getting some terrible virus on your computer. They will go straight to the Nine Inch Nails website, and they say, "Here is all of our music. You can have it." And they are in the process of figuring out another business model, and their business model is more like Well, another thing they do, they give away their multi-tracks too. And I recommended to one of my students on Mix Coach the other day to go to the Nine Inch Nails website, download their favorite song, and that's how they can learn to mix, mix Nine Inch Nails songs. I think what they do is they give away MP3s because you can't make an MP3 better than it is on the net, right? You can't run it through some processor, take some of the garbly stuff out of it that you may or may not be able to hear on your headphones, but you can hear it on these speakers if I configure them a certain way. You can definitely tell the difference between a 24-bit, 44K WAV file or an AIF file and an MP3, even in a high-quality MP3. You can tell the difference. So they give away their MP3s, but they know that there's this human nature thing called reciprocation. And that, for instance, if we were to have a daily meeting after a certain class of yours, and I bought you lunch every day, there would come a point with you when you would say, "Dude, let me buy lunch today. You've bought me lunch for the last 3 weeks every day. I've got to give you something back." Right? That's just a human nature thing. I guarantee, you know, unless you're just a different kind of person, that you would want to reciprocate after a while.
Yeah.
So I think that's a marketing model that some people are using now. They give away some things and give people opportunity to reciprocate. And what Nine Inch Nails has done is they give away their MP3s, which is what they're going to download from LimeWire and FrostWire, and I don't know how many more there are out there like that, but they're going to download them anyway. So you may as well come to my website and see that, you know, that you can get it here. Just come here and get it, since you're going to get it anyway. But if you want the box set, you want the high-quality WAV files, then here's an opportunity. You can buy the CD from us too, and we'll give you a T-shirt with it. Or you can subscribe to our blog, and you can sit here and chat with me like you and I are sitting here talking. You know, hey, you know, this is so-and-so with Nine Inch Nails, and Tuesday night at 6 o'clock I'm going to be talking to some of my guys. It's open forum. You can ask me any question you want to. I mean, if you're a real Nine Inch Nails fan, you're going to go and do that. And that's another way reciprocation works, you know. You know, I sit and talk to that dude, and people don't necessarily steal music from people that they know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons that you would download a Lady Gaga song if you liked it, because you don't know her, but if you had lunch with her the day before or talked to the phone over there that night, you would think twice, maybe even three times about giving your friends a copy of that CD or going somewhere and bypassing her iTunes store and going to FrostWire or LimeWire or something, downloading something, because you know her now, right? Yeah. And so people, I think that's one of the things that record companies have separated artists from their fans. They've always gone through a record company, and people, when they download stuff for free, don't really factor in the fact that they're stealing from the artist. They think they're stealing from big corporate record company, right?
Yeah.
So it's not hurting anybody. It's a victimless crime, right? Because they don't feel like they know them.
Yeah, I've seen, like, all these jokes online about how, Puff Daddy can't buy his island for his kid this year or something like that, and how they're like, oh, these artists have so much money if I'm just stealing a few songs, and, I mean, how much could that possibly be hurting them? And I hear that argument a lot. Whereas when it comes to local bands, because I go to a lot of local shows and see a lot of local bands, people will throw out money to these local bands, even in donations and buying T-shirts and stuff. And I just see people throwing a lot more money towards local bands that they're going to see live on a normal basis and thinking, oh, these big mainstream bands, I'll just take their shows from them.
Well, you know, and I'm not picking on any style of music, but, you know, rap artists, when you see a P. Diddy video, they're throwing dollar bills. They're throwing $100 bills around. They're drinking, you know, expensive champagne. They're driving in their Hummers that are, you know, I mean, with their $10,000 worth of wheels on it. I mean, so it's kind of hard to feel bad for those kind of guys because they got more money. At least they're putting out that persona that they've got more money and that you, I mean, they don't need your money anyway, which is a load of crap for the most part, because a lot of those artists who are throwing those $100 bills away haven't made it yet. And those $100 bills are going away eventually. And but anyway, so they've kind of put that vibe out there that, you know, they're rich. And what do people want to do? I mean, back in the, I mean, fairy tales, the story of Robin Hood was what? You know, steal from the rich and give to the poor. So that, I mean, that's, they're creating that whole, that thing themselves. And I think one of the smartest guys, I cannot remember his name right now. Chamillionaire. You know who Chamillionaire is?
I know the name.
Yeah. He is a smart guy. He's a rapper, but he's a smart guy. And one of the, I don't listen to rap a lot. There's some rap I like, but I don't listen to it a lot. It's not a genre that I listen to a lot. But I have to say, he did a tech conference about a year ago, and he was talking about using social media, Twitter, Facebook, blogs, all this new social media in order to connect with their fans. And he did some really, really honest videos where he just was sitting in front of his MacBook and he was going, hey, you know, in this rap thing, you know, we're throwing $100 bills around, we're driving cars and stuff, but I have to tell you the truth. He said, I bought a $10 million mansion, and here's what it cost me. You know, you don't think about, you think about the $10 million mansion, but you don't think about the insurance payment that goes with it, and the house payment that goes with it, and the, if you want it to look good, if you usually $10 million, they don't build $10 million houses in low rent neighborhoods. You have to keep it to a certain standard, and then you can't just park your grandmother's Oldsmobile out the front. I mean, so that stuff, he said, and I'll tell you the truth, he said, my mom got cancer last year, and it made me really realize, you know, what everything's about. I mean, this guy was being really honest, and he was going, I sold my $10 million mansion, and I think he even filed bankruptcy, and I don't know the whole story behind that, but basically it was like one of those things where it's like, I connected with him at that point. I thought, you know, this dude is not just some guy with a, you know, $20,000 grill, you know, talking to me about how much money he's got. This guy's being honest, and to tell you the truth, I would probably go out and buy a Chamillionaire record just because of that connection right there. And it didn't take, I mean, how much money did it cost him to sit there in front of his MacBook and put a video on YouTube?
Nothing at all.
And connected with me. And I would go and buy a record now. Nothing. I mean, so that's what, I think that's what you're seeing now, is that the trend is that advertising this way is getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And this record right here, 61 million views, cost $2,000 to produce. So, I mean, the cost of it's going down, so people have to be smarter about how they're marketing themselves and the persona they're putting out. I mean, if you put a persona out that, I don't need your money, I've got more money than I know what to do with, then you're setting yourself up for people to steal from you, right?
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, I'm a dude just like you, and I worked the whole month of June on this single right here, and it cost me this much money, and this is what happened during that whole process, then when you hear that story behind him creating that track in June, are you gonna be as inclined to go, you know what, he's not gonna be able to buy his kids an island in the Caribbean. I'm just gonna go to Frostwire and get it. Or are you gonna be the guy that says, you know, this dude's just like me. He's got bills just like I do. He's got family drama just like I do. And he's got friends that, you know, just like I do. I mean, that's the thing. We've probably gotten way off of the whole music business. Maybe not. I mean, because this is the whole brand new model of the music business.
Yeah.
You know, connecting. I think where this started out was like the old business model is that you've got your fans here on the left, and then you got your record company in the middle, And then you've got your artist here. And the fans are going, hey, let us to the artist. And the record company says, no, you can only see this if you go to, you know, Barnes & Noble and buy their record, or, you know, get it in iTunes. And the artist is over here looking over the record company going, I just want to connect with my fans because those people are the ones that are coming to my concerts, which is how I really make money anyway, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the whole Dixie Chicks things a few years ago where they sued the record company. You know, record deals are not designed to make artists money. They're designed to make record companies money. And the tour is what the artist is making money on. So now you've seen record companies doing a whole 360 deal where, you know, we're going to support your tour and we want a cut of the t-shirts. We want a cut of the beer sales at your concert. We want a cut of the popcorn and hot dogs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, now you're going with this whole 360 model where, you know, everybody's just scrambling to make sense of it, but it's and for good reason. It's all changing.
Yeah, and like you were saying, with artists trying to connect with their fans, I've seen like a lot recently, a lot of studio blogs, a lot of every band, even local bands, small bands have a Twitter, they have a Facebook, they have a MySpace. They always are on it and talking to people. I've seen a lot of things where they'll do question stuff, like you were talking mm-hmm. about interviews and chats and stuff mm-hmm. and really just trying to connect with their fans, and I guess that makes sense to where they're trying to make it to where their fans won't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might not be their only point of doing it, mm-hmm. but they're keeping fans from stealing their music by personalizing them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't know that I would say that it's just they're trying to keep their fans from stealing their music, but it definitely helps. It definitely helps. I mean, because you're not gonna. You know, grab one of my hard drives here and take off with it. There's free music on there. And you could very well grab that hard drive and take off out the door, and I would never see it again. But the fact that we're having this conversation here and that me talking to you and you talking to me, we're gaining this relationship and this level of trust thing, you know, if you even thought about taking that hard drive full of music, you would think about it less now. And the next time we meet, you think about it even less. And then the next time we met, you might even think about, hey, how can I get Kevin some more work over here? Because, you know, I like the music he makes, and I think that my buddy who has a band might like to work with Kevin. And then the next time we meet, you might tell another band. So I think you're right. It's a means to an end. And the real thing is the connection between the artist and the person who will support their, you know, their music making habit.
Do you think that with that, do you think there's a possibility that artists will start trying to jump ship with the labels and try to go straight to the fans?
I mean, it's happening. It's been happening for 8 or 10 years now.
I know artists like, I know Toby Keith, he has his own label that mm-hmm. he started once he got enough money. He started his own label and...
Well, Bare Naked Ladies. I mean, I don't know if you remember them or not, but I mean that's been 10 years ago or so. But they were without a record label for a long time. They just decided that, you know, it wasn't worth it, and then a record label, a bunch of suits, which is what it came down to, a bunch of executive bean counters, were saying, you know, we like this song better than this song, or we think this song will, you know, and they know. Bare Naked Ladies were saying, no, this is a song everybody's going crazy about. And then you got a bunch of guys over here going, well, you know, so-and-so produced this one, and we paid a lot of money for him to produce this, so it needs, and we promised him in the contract that it would be the first single. And, I mean, I can totally see why a group would say, you know what, I'm done with the record label. There's an example that I used on some teaching websites that I have. You can find this stuff on kevinwardmusic.com. There's a girl named Jill Sobule, and I know you don't remember her because you just, you know, but anyway, she was, she had a song out in 96 called I Kissed a Girl before the new girl, Katy Perry.
Yeah.
She had it back then. It was huge then. So if you want to hit, name it I Kissed a Girl, especially if you're a girl. But anyway, she had that hit out then, so she had, and she was just out, I think she was with the Bangles, or it was a girl band she was with at one time. She broke out, she did that hit, it was a big, big hit with the lesbian community, all that kind of stuff. I mean, so she was a huge star. Record company had her, and they said, we got it. Jessel Buell's a big star. Well, they couldn't get the second big hit out of her, so they dropped her. So record company B is sitting there saying, we could probably get another hit out of Jessel Buell and make a mint. So they signed her, and they couldn't get a hit out of her, so they dropped her. So here's Jessel Buell going, you know, this is my art you're talking about. These are the songs that I wrote from my heart that you're saying I can't make any money on it, so be on your way. You know, we're going to keep your masters, but you be on your way. So then two indie labels picked her up. They subsequently dropped her. So she's been dropped from labels four times. So finally what she did was she decided that she didn't need a record label. She was smart because she built relationships with the people who were saying, hey, Jill, love your song, blah, blah, blah. And she would say, hey, thanks very much. Thanks for buying the record. What happens then? You know, there's connection happens, and they say, I love Jill Sobule because she emailed me back. Or she responded to me on Twitter. Or she responded to me on Facebook. And then so what she did finally was she said, okay, I want to record a record. It's going to cost $70,000. And I need to raise this in order to get started on the record. Now, you guys have been saying you wanted a record, and I'm just being honest with you here. I don't have the money. I don't have the money that it takes to make a record. So, for $10, if you'll donate $10 to recording the record, and there's a website called JillsNextRecord.com, and you can see the model of it. For $10, I'll send you a free download when we're done with the record, and I'll keep you posted as to what's going on during the record. For $25, and I'm pulling these figures off my head, so they're not completely accurate. For $25, I'll send you a CD, and for $50, I'll send you a signed CD, and for $75, I'll send you a signed CD plus a T-shirt. And she went right on up the scale. For $3,000, I will send you a dozen CDs, T-shirts, and I'll come to your house and perform for 10 of your friends. I'll perform every song on the record. For $5,000, you'll be named as an executive producer on my record, and I'll mention your name in the credit song. And for $10,000, you can sing on my record.
That's pretty genius right there.
Pretty genius. You know how much money she raised in about 12 days?
How much?
About $80,000. And you know how much she had to pay back when she got her record done? Zero. Because her fans paid for it. And she delivered. And what do you think that did when her fans kicked in that money and then she gave them everything that she said she would? And then more, probably. It created that bond even more. So, I mean, and now there's a thing called Kickstarter.com that's based on that whole same principle. Where, you know, if you've got a movie that you want to make, or you've got a record that you want to do, or you've got any kind of a cartoon you want to do, you basically put it out there. It's a business plan. You say, hey, I want to do this. This is how much it's going to take to do it. If I don't raise all the money, if I don't raise this amount of money, then you'll get your money back. Don't feel like you're wasting anything. And here's what you'll get if you donate this much money to my Kickstarter program. I mean, it's just, it's the new business model. Fan-supported music. Imagine that.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So.
But, yeah, so I think that's pretty cool. I think that would be nice to see have artists jumping over the record label and going straight to the fans and not having to deal with the whole big business controlling the music and putting out what they want to hear and all that stuff.
If you think about this, I mean, back in the day, and you're younger than I am, I remember these days, but back in the day, if you wanted to be an artist, you had to have a record company because the record company had all the relationships with TV. They could get you on MTV. They had all the relationships with radio, so they could get you on, you know, Casey Kasem's Top 40, which I think, who does it now? American Idol guy? Ron Seacrest.
Yeah.
He does it now. So they had the connections with the Ron Seacrest, and they could get your, you know, they could get some kind of spotlight thing on you. They had those connections. They could get you on, in the Rolling Stone magazine, they could get you on the cover, or they could get you an ad placed right under the chart position, or they could get you an interview with Rolling Stone or something like that. Well, now everything's changed because you don't need MTV anymore because you can get 61 million views in a week on a record, on a video, right?
Yeah.
You don't need radio anymore because you can do your own podcast. You can put it up on iTunes overnight. You don't need magazine articles, because you can do your own blog and you can do social media, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. You don't need that stuff anymore. All you need to do is have that, what we started off talking about, all you need is marketing ideas and strategy, and you need some business sense to know, say, if they offered me X amount for the advertising space here, how much could I make with this, and how much this, and what kind of royalty are you talking about here, and how much per click? And I mean, you got to have that business sense to be able to put that together. So that's why I'm saying, yes, learning to record is important, but learning to market your recording and learning how to monetize it is more important, or as at least equally as important as making the music. And if you can't do it, then you need to at least have the sense and the education and the knowledge to be able to hire somebody to do that for you, and know when you're not getting screwed over.
Yeah, and one of my last question was, is the future of music production bright? And I mean, just through this conversation, I mean, just for me, what I'm thinking about is it's pretty something I'm looking forward to. Absolutely. Is to see these artists putting it out themselves and not having to go through these large companies.
Right. Well, you were going to ask a question. Is music business bright? And let me look up something real quick. Shmo Yoho. It's the trying to think of their name. It's the something brothers. Okay, these look at all these views right here. I mean, the lowest one you're seeing is what? 1,600,000? Yeah. 19 million? 76 million? 2 million? Oh, there's a piddly 689,000. But these guys, nobody knew who they were before the Bed Intruder song.
Yep.
Nobody. And now, did you see the Emmys? The Emmy Awards a few weeks ago? There was an auto-tune the news type of thing. And I can't verify this, but I'll bet you they did it. I'll bet you the Emmy committee said, hey, can you put something like the Bed Intruder song to where you take some of these lines from some of the movies like Lord of the Rings and some of these vampire movies and stuff. Can you take what they said and turn it into a song? And we'll pay you $100,000 to do it, because it's going to be featured. And it's going to be at prime time on Sunday night, one of the most watched shows of ever. I mean, of that time slot ever. Are you interested in that? And they probably said yes, because we heard it. And then they made money. So they are monetizing music in a way that nobody's done it before.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have a record company.
They still don't. But you know what they do have? They've got their own YouTube channel that cost them nothing to put up, and they make money on it every day.
Yep.
So,
and they've got 50,000 subscribers. I mean, those people are going to watch those videos.
And don't you think if these guys were to do a record themselves, and they're crazy talented. I mean, they can sing, they can play, they can write. It's obvious everything they can do. There's 52,000 possible record sales right there that they don't have to cut with anybody. So you tell me, if you can figure out how to market your music and how to make it viral and how to gain fans and win trust of people that would buy your music, do you think music has a pretty cool future?
Yeah.
And are you excited about coming right out of school and not having, you know, I've probably got $50,000 worth of equipment here that I could do, literally, I could do it on this laptop. I mean, I've got everything on here I need to take anything and make it music. So that would excite me pretty much.
Yeah, because it's not about, I mean, it's all about your talent and how you can do it. And it's really a make your own
mm-hmm.
type of...
Exactly, how you can market it. And let me show you one other thing. And this girl cannot sing, and she knows she cannot sing. You ever heard of I, Justine?
No, I have not.
She's a beautiful girl.
Welcome to Vlog University. Thank you so
She's pretty. That doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt at all.
But she's decent. She's not vulgar. She's not running around in her bikini all the time. And she does music videos like this. I haven't seen this. I don't know. This may be, this may contradict everything. But see?
Yep, got an ad right there.
Stars paid for an ad to go right there. And we've got to watch it. We have no choice but to watch it.
Yeah, those are we have a skip. I think some of them have a skip and a lot of them don't. That annoys me, though, with YouTube. The whole thing. That's just how you'll die. Oh, take, take, take. Bad never let you live. Should've known you were a camper from the first hit. You were standing.
Recorded in GarageBand, I guarantee it. Cut with Final Cut Pro. You gave it all you had, but you shot nothing but trash. You shot nothing but trash. She's talking trash to somebody who's playing video games with her.
Yeah.
She rewrote Bruno Mars' Grenade song. What you don't understand is I'll just toss a grenade at you. Cut your hands on my blade, yeah. Call the dog. You think she's a great singer?
No.
Okay. Drop a napalm strike. Look how many views it's got.
Yeah.
You think it matters?
Nope.
Because what she has is a relationship with the fans. Not crazy talent. Of course she is crazy talented. Because you know what she did? She wrote this remake. She did the music of the remake. She recorded it. She shot this video. And she's marketing genius.
Yep.
There's not a video on here that's gotten less than... Look, 116. This is the kind of stuff she does right here. And if she were to put out a record, there would be a...
But Mikey J made this... I was going to say awesome. I have to stop saying awesome.
There's a bunch of 13-year-old girls that adore her, and there's a bunch of middle-aged men who adore her also. But and she's marketing to those people. If she were to come out with a record, she'd sell it. But she don't have to because she's got people like this that are buying the advertising space on her website. And then she's got Kodak saying, "Hey, would you consider doing one of your videos with a Kodak camera and say that it's a Kodak camera?" And there's one of those on there. And then Mario Brothers is probably saying, "Hey, would you mind if we gave you $50,000? Would you mind blah blah blah?" And then the guys from Law and Order or Criminal Intent or whatever says, "Hey, she's a pretty girl and she's obviously good in front of a camera. Let's hire her to. She's made a living just being herself on, and by being herself, she." Gains the trust of other people, and when they trust other people, they want to buy stuff from her. So anyway, so yeah, I think for people who can get their head around what's going on with music and what's going on with this whole thing, then there's a lot of potential for guys to make a lot of money that we hadn't even thought of how to do it yet. I mean, who would have thought that you could have taken a newscast and put a beat behind it? And it would, that many people would watch it.
Yeah, and it was something that stayed in your head. I mean, everyone knew about The Bad Intruder song.
I know. Who would have thought that, even a year ago? I mean, maybe T-Pain. And even T-Pain's on one of these things. I mean, everybody knows who they are. Now, they've made themselves famous on YouTube, which is free.
I really think that's cool that the future is you can... It's all about your own talent, and even more so, how you can market yourself. And it's really all, I mean, you can make it yourself. You don't have to land that record deal to make it in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, cool. You have what you need for your interview?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. I came into this, it was supposed to be on the production side, but now I'm flipping over and doing marketing side, so that works too.
Yeah. Well, so I'll turn the... Hey, for those of you who are still watching or listening on the podcast or whatever this becomes, thanks for listening. And if you got any questions, be sure and ask them below this video, okay? See you soon.